Let me start with a quotation here from the Daily Beast website. As students learn science, they discover they've been misled by their religious upbringing. They discover that evolution is not tottering and about to collapse. The Big Bang is not an unfounded speculation. The Earth is clearly very old. Noah's flood can't possibly have been worldwide. The result is an intellectual crisis, and many young Christians simply walk away from their faith with a feeling of betrayal. Here's another statement. The Barna Group has examined the phenomenon of young people leaving the church. The president of Barna put a book out called You Lost Me. Now, his claim is that significant numbers of young adults with a Christian background feel that, churches are out of step with the scientific world we live in, and even that, quote, Christianity is anti-science. Well, there's no other issue, probably, that would lead young Christians to believe that than a look at Genesis and how everything got started. So what I'd like to do is to explore different views that sincere Christians hold regarding the creation. And I'm hoping young people understand that the entire Christian community does not share a single belief that could be mocked when these young people go off to college. I'd like them to know that there are various ways to interpret Genesis, and that each has its strengths, and frankly, each has its weaknesses. So we don't really know, and this should not be a hill that we're ready to die on as Christians, and that we need some flexibility, that this will not crush us when we go off to school and have a teacher say, oh, you must believe in such and such if you're a Christian. And we can say, not necessarily. There are a lot of different views of Genesis. So let's take a look. We're going to look at different views. I'm going to be as fair as possible. Obviously, I have my own view, but I'm trying to be fair with these. We're going to look at the strengths of each view. Well, where did the view get started? Who are some of the proponents? What are some of the strengths and what are some of the weaknesses? But let's start here. Why are there so many different views? Now, maybe you've grown up hearing just one. Where I live, the popular view is called Young Earth. But maybe you grew up someplace else and there was another view that was touted and you thought that was the only one. No, there are various views. We're going to discuss five. So let's start with this. Why in the world do we find so many different views toward Genesis? Well, number one, I think, is because of the Hebrew vocabulary. When you take a look at Genesis and you're reading through, the original Hebrew is very limited. It has something like 7,000 words. English has like 500,000. So Hebrew often has a word that does double, triple, or quadruple duty. In other words, it can mean various things. And so we end up with this kind of shading of meaning where we're not exactly specifically sure 100% what the author meant by that particular word. So one is vocabulary, limited Hebrew vocabulary. Secondly is the fact that the Bible is understated. It tends to leave out a lot of things that we might want answered. For example, we hardly know what anybody looked like in the Bible. Very rarely do they slow down and give you a physical description of somebody. So the Bible tends to leave out a lot because obviously the focus is on God. Number three, sometimes there are just simple translation problems. As we move from the Hebrew to the Greek or from the Hebrew to the English, from one language to the next, of course, it's hard to make translations be totally accurate. Number four, we're dealing with a culture that was very different in time and customs. And so that may explain some of what we run into as far as seeing different views of Genesis. Number five, the Bible is primarily a religious text. It's not a scientific text. And so, as I said before, it tends to skip over or leave out completely things that might have clarified the science behind whatever it's talking about. And then finally, why are there various views? I think our egos get in the way. I think sometimes we clash just to hear ourselves clash, and that's not a very complimentary thing, but that's the way humans are. So are there various views? Yes. I think those are some of the reasons. Something we want to think about, too, before we plunge into this is considering the fact that there are literal and figurative ways to read passages in the Bible. So, for example, 1 Chronicles 16:13 says, "The world is established, it shall never be moved." And that's echoed also in Psalm 93:1. And it's echoed in Psalm 104:5. "The earth will never be moved." Okay, so let's think about those three for just a minute. It says the earth will never be moved. And so for a long time, people looked at that and they said, well, see, the Earth is the center of the universe. Everything moves, but the Earth doesn't, because it says it will never be moved. Well, now we know that the Earth does move, so we have to reinterpret, don't we? We have to think about that. Maybe that was not a literal statement. Maybe there was a figure of speech going on there. So let's think about those. Here are the most common views. We're going to be looking at five of them. One's called the Young Earth view. Another is called Old Earth, sometimes called Day Age. Third is theistic evolution. And then maybe two that you're not as familiar with. One's called the analogic, and the last one's called the framework theory. So let's start with Young Earth creationism. What are the essential doctrines, the ideas? God created in six consecutive 24-hour periods of creation. Day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6. Those were literal 24-hour periods of time because it says day. And the Earth is something like 6 to 10,000 years old. Now, Young Earthers may be kind of split as far as how old the universe is, but they tend to agree that the Earth is extremely young, and that they believe Noah's flood covered the whole Earth, and that explains a lot of the geological figures that we see. Calvin and Luther supported this. Somebody named Usher, who is a bishop way back when from Ireland, came up with 4004 BC as the start of the Earth. And so ever since then, there have been reference Bibles that have used that date, and so that may have been part of where it got its momentum. And then a man named George Price in the 1920s wrote a book called New Geology, and he went with the idea of catastrophism. In other words, what you see around the Earth today, like the Grand Canyon or the Himalayas or whatever, they were not formed over millions of years of extremely slow action by streams or Earth's tectonic plates or whatever. That instead, there was this huge catastrophe. That's Noah's flood. It upended everything. Henry Morris popularized this in the 1960s. Now, he's the one I remember really pushing the Young Earth position. He was in the area that I live in, San Diego County. And there's a museum, ICR, Institute for Creation Research, located in our area. No, I think it finally moved. It moved to Texas, so I take that back. Who are the key people in the Young Earth creation camp? Henry Morris, he's passed away. But currently with us is Ken Ham, H-A-M, Ken Ham. And so these are the ones that are the spark plugs for this. Now, where did they get their support? Well, they say just a simple understanding. As you read Genesis, it says day one, day two, an evening and morning. It sounds like a day. So they're saying it's the most literal, down-to-earth way to interpret that. They also use genealogies found in Genesis 5. And 11, it says things like, well, when Adam lived 130 years, he had a son, and then he lived 800 more years. And so then they'll take these years, they'll add them up and run them back, and they'll get to 4000 BC or so. They also believe Genesis 7 is a universal flood, not just a local flood, but universal. So we'll come across that again. They'll take Exodus 20, verses 9 through 11. It says, remember the Sabbath, 6 days shall you labor, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth. So there it is, says 6 days. They'll also use a New Testament passage where Paul is talking about sin in Romans 5, 12. Paul says this, sin entered the world through one man and death through sin. And in this way, death came to all men. So their interpretation is that there was no death before the fall, which means there can't be millions of years of dinosaurs and other kinds of animals living. Sin brought death. That's the first time that animals died. So those are some of the supporting pieces. Science, they'll say, well, comets actually have a short lifespan. They'll say there's not enough seafloor sediment. They're talking about the decaying magnetic field around the Earth, that it can't have existed for millions of years. They say the radiometric dating of the rocks is incorrect. They believe in many cases that there are a different set of physical laws before the fall and then a different set afterwards. Now, are there any problems with the Young Earth position? Yes. Here are some, and again, I'm trying to be fair. We're going back and forth with the strengths and weaknesses. Day six of the creation seems longer than 24 hours. Adam is created. He tends the garden. He grows lonely. He names all the animals. And when Eve shows up, he says, "At last." And that's an odd thing to say if it's just been a few hours since you were created. Other days seem longer. For example, on one day God says, "Let the land produce vegetation." Well, to produce vegetation takes an extended period of time. Third problem, and this is a major problem, is very little scientific support. In fact, one time they asked the president of the Institute for Creation Research, that's the one founded by Henry Morris, well, his son, Dr. John Morris, was being interviewed on a radio station. He was asked that if he or anybody that he knew had ever met or maybe heard of a scientist who was persuaded because of the scientific evidence to become a young earther. He said no. They asked Dwayne Gish, who's also a huge star in the field of young earth, they asked him the same question. Do you know of anybody, any scientist, who's looked at the evidence and become a young earther because of the evidence? He said no. So that's honesty, but it seems to lack some scientific support. Here's another problem with the young earth position. The universe does appear to be ancient, and if that's the case, then we have God as a trickster, a conjurer. He's done something, but he's tricked us. We look at the universe and think one thing, but God has done something else. Another problem. This actually requires speeded up evolution if you're a young earther. If you, for example, you've got the Noah's Ark, and it's only a few thousand years ago, and the animals come out of the ark, and the worldwide, we've wiped out all the animals. See, the only animals that survive, according to this view, are the ones on the ark. So that means two cats come off the ark. They have to turn into all the cats, all the different kinds of cats we have today. Two dogs come off the ark. They have to turn into wolves and coyotes and all these things in just a few thousand years. That's an amazing change that's happening awfully fast. Evolutionists don't think change happens that fast. Here's another problem with the young earth position. The word day that we encounter in Genesis can have several meanings. And right in Genesis, if you look at Genesis 2:4, it says, "In the day the Lord made the heaven and the earth." I'm sorry, I'll say that again. Genesis 2:4, "In the day the Lord made the earth and the heavens." Well, he didn't make the earth and the heavens in one day. It took him more time than that. Genesis 2:17, "In the day you eat of it, you shall surely die." Well, they didn't die. Adam and Eve did not die on the day, the 24-hour day that they ate. They had time to have family later on, and they died long, long time after that. So we're back to that limited Hebrew word. The word, the vocabulary is so limited, you can have day with a bunch of different meanings. Also, no morning and no evening to the seventh day. That apparently is not a day. In fact, in Hebrews, it suggests that we're still in the seventh day. So that's not a 24-hour period. Maybe the others aren't either. All right, let's move to, so that's called the young earth position. Let's talk about old earth creationism, sometimes called day age. Their view is that the earth, yes, they go along with what the scientists say. The earth is billions of years old and the universe is billions and billions of years old. But it doesn't mean they're evolutionists. They say that God had to inject information periodically to create new species. You can't have evolution bringing new species about. God had to start life. God had to move periodically to bring about new species on this earth. So they're not evolutionists. They also indicate that church creeds never made the age of the earth anything essential. You had to believe in the deity of Jesus, but you didn't have to believe in a particular view of the age of the earth. It was actually popular before the 20th century among evangelicals. Probably the most well-known person today who advocates for this position is Hugh Ross. He's put out a lot of books. He has his own organization called Reasons to Believe. And another one is William Lane Craig, very well-known debater, Christian debater. So you have sincere people in each camp. So I don't want you to walk away from this thinking, well, it's one view is right and everybody else is a heretic. That's not true. A lot of sincere Christians are going to fall into these various areas. So what's the support for the old earth? Well, they say evening and morning, as indicated in Genesis, again, because of that Hebrew vocabulary, can be an indefinite period of time. For example, Psalm 30, verses 4 and 5, "Weeping may remain for a night, but rejoicing comes in the morning." Well, are they literally talking morning, or do they just mean later on in life? Day three says the land produced. We already talked about that. That seems to suggest a long period of time. The meaning of day varies. We've already talked about that. This is an old earth position. The seventh day is different. We talked about that. Hebrews 4 suggests that day has not come to an end yet. They also believe Noah's flood was local. We'll come back to that in just a second. They say, well, let's look at Romans 5:12. Remember what we said about 5:12. I'm going to read it one more time. Sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, and in this way death came to all men. They say, wait a minute, read that more carefully. Sin came through because of Adam, and death came because of sin, but whose death? It came to all men. It doesn't say the entire universe. It doesn't say death to all animals. So they say Paul is talking about spiritual death came to men, but it had nothing to say about animals. So you could have animal death before the creation of people. Genealogies. What about the genealogies? Can you really run all those numbers back and get a date? No, because sometimes when they say so-and-so was the father of, it can just mean ancestor. So it's awfully vague to be able to use those numbers. Apparently, people are skipped over in some of those genealogies. Old earthers will turn for support in a very strong way to science. They'll talk about the speed of light. They'll talk about the distance of stars. They'll talk about the Big Bang, the expansion of the universe. They'll talk about the temperature in the background of the cosmos, that you had that flash of light at the beginning. That heated up things, but it's been cooling ever since. Kind of like an oven. You bake something, you leave the oven door open, gradually that oven cools off. Well, that seems to have required the billions of years that science talks about. Stellar burning. The stars burn at a certain rate that, for some stars, takes them billions of years to burn through. They look at ice deposits, coral layers. All these things seem to agree that the Earth is ancient. And all fields of science agree, cosmology or physics or geology, they all seem to suggest it's an old Earth that we live on. Now, I mentioned before Genesis 7 that talks about the flood, because that's a crucial part. The young earthers say, oh, it's obvious, it's a worldwide phenomenon. But I'm going to share something with you here. Let's take a look at Genesis 7, 17 to 24. For 40 days, the flood kept coming on the earth, and as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the earth. The waters rose and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the surface of the water. They rose greatly on the earth, and all the high mountains under the entire heavens were covered. The waters rose and covered the mountains to a depth of more than 20 feet. Every living thing that moved on the earth perished. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. The waters flooded the earth for 150 days. Wow, that sounds pretty powerful, doesn't it? It says the earth. So what do you think? You're thinking of that globe hanging in space. Me too. And it says all the high mountains under the heavens were covered. The mountains. So I'm picturing the Rockies, I'm picturing the Sierras, I'm picturing the Himalayas. And it says all those high mountains got covered. In fact, it says the mountains got covered to a depth of more than 20 feet. So you would actually be up above those mountains, at least 20 feet of water. And it says everything that moved on the earth got wiped out. So you say, wow, that's pretty obvious. It's got to be a worldwide flood. Oh, not so fast. Remember again, this is about the fifth time, Hebrew vocabulary is very, very limited. So the word earth can equally be translated as land. The word mountains can be equally translated as hills. And finally, the word heavens can be sky. So what would that sound like if we read the same passage, but this time we insert land instead of earth, hills instead of mountains, sky instead of heavens? I think it makes a huge difference. It causes me to picture it very differently. So here we go, Genesis 7, 17 to 24, an old earth perspective based on those vocabulary words that are interchangeable. For 40 days, the flood kept coming on the land, and as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the land. The waters rose and increased greatly on the land, and the ark floated on the surface of the water. They rose greatly on the land, and all the high hills under the entire sky were covered. Now here comes a new part. The waters rose more than 20 feet. That's equally correct as saying 20 feet high above the mountains. So let's read that sentence again. The waters rose more than 20 feet and the hills were covered. Every living thing that moved on the land perished. Every living thing on the face of the land was wiped out. The waters flooded the land for 150 days. That sounds fairly small and local, doesn't it now? So we're back to that issue about which word is exactly correct. Okay, let's talk about problems with the old earth. Well, the old earth position hooks itself up very carefully to science. Now, if science changes, if the Big Bang Theory is thrown out, if other things with the speed of light or the way the stars burn, if some of that goes out, the old earth situation gets kind of shaky. And many people think it makes the Bible too elastic. It seems to stretch away from the literal meanings of the text. So those are some issues that people are going to raise against the old earth position. But I want you to think about something. These two are probably the leading theories about how it all happened in Genesis. And I would, instead of us talking about how different they are, let's think for just a minute of the similarities that they share. Neither of those positions believes in Darwinian evolution. Both of them says God was involved in creation at every stage. There are evangelical Christians, sincere, good Christians for both positions. Neither of them says there is enough time for evolution to operate. They both believe Adam and Eve were real people created recently compared to the whole age of the earth or the age of the universe. And they're considered within Christian orthodoxy. So we're not dealing with any heretics here. So we need to have a lot of compassion and show mercy and grace toward people that might disagree with us. So let's move to the third one. And this one is a little newer, but it's had a lot of money behind it, and it's caught the attention of a lot of people. Now here's the idea. It's called theistic evolution. So the word theist has to do with God. So it's something about God evolution together. So here's their beliefs. God set up natural laws. And so he used natural selection and he used evolution. And chapters 1 and 2 in Genesis are not really historical documents. God worked in subtle ways, unrecognizable to science, to move creation along through what looked like evolution. Now, when they get to the New Testament, theistic evolutionists believe Jesus and the New Testament are historical. This view is supported by science. It's supported by some Christian universities. The key person behind this is Francis Collins. He was the leader of the Human Genome Project that you might have heard of. There's a picture of him standing next to Bill Clinton. So pretty powerful person. And he is the director of the National Institutes of Health. He said this, "The evidence supporting the idea that all living things are descended from a common ancestor is truly overwhelming. I would not necessarily wish that to be so as a Bible-believing Christian, but it is so. It does not serve faith well to try to deny that." So he says, "I've bought into evolution. I think it really happened." And now he's going to combine that with God. In other words, God is behind evolution. Well, are there problems with this position? Remember, their strength is that they're buying into science, what science says. But here's the problem. And you can take a look at one of my talks. I have a talk called Evolution and Creation. The evidence for evolution seems to be weakening. The idea of spontaneous creation, the idea that mutation, natural selection can bring new information and create more sophisticated body parts, that's not working. The transitions, that's not working. Francis Collins used to believe in junk DNA that was a result of evolution. Now they're finding out, no, there is no such thing as junk DNA, and he's had to back off of that. He and the theistic evolution have to deal with something called the Cambrian explosion. How did these new life forms come about without any precursors? And by the way, scientists disregard this theistic evolution thing. They say, no, come on. If you believe in evolution, the definition of evolution is something that's unguided. There is no guiding hand behind it. It also has a few Bible problems. It seems to say Adam and Eve are not historical, but Paul and Jesus referred to Adam and Eve. They thought they were historical. Don't we have a problem there? What are they going to do with those first few chapters of Genesis that talk about sin? They talk about the fall. Apparently, these things either didn't happen or it's very different than the way most Christians interpret them. Let's get to the fourth view. So we have young earth, old earth, theistic evolution. Here's the fourth one. It's called analogic. So an analogy, I'm sure most of you understand, an analogy is just making a comparison between two different things so that you can understand them better. So here's the analogic view. The days in Genesis are God's work days like we have our work days, and so it's nothing but a pattern. It just says, look, it took God 6 days of work and one to rest. There's a ratio going on there, 6 to 1. There's no set time for those days. Let's not sit there and agonize over the science. It's a 6 to 1. Work 6, take 1 off. Well, that's kind of nice. That theory seems to... It's nice because it doesn't have to deal with science. It says, let's not worry about when things got created and, you know, what species turned into what species. But the problem is, it doesn't really see Genesis as literal. It's just there to be a 6 to 1 ratio. So I'm not really sold on that. I hate to stick my opinion in there, but there are plenty of good Christians that believe that one. Here's a newer one that that struck me as interesting. I don't know if I bought into it yet, but it's something you ought to consider, I think. It's called the framework theory. So what they're going to do is they're going to read Genesis as literature. And you say, well, can you read Genesis? Isn't it pure history? Well, there's a lot of Genesis, the beginning there, that sounds like poetry. I teach literature. It sounds like poetry. And here's how the framework theory works. It says there are three sets of twos in the story. What do I mean by three sets of twos? Let's take the first set. Light is created on day one. On day four, specific lights are created. So there's a set. Day one, day four. Here's the second set. Day two, the sky and water are created, called the firmament. Day five, birds and water creatures are created to go in that firmament. So we got day one, day four. Now we got day two, day five. The third pair is day three, dry land, with day six. What do you need to put in the dry land? You need land creatures. You need plants. You need people. So let's go over it one more time. Day one, day four, two and five, three and six. So think of it this way. I've heard some people call it this. They'll say, well, the kingdoms are established on day one, day two, day three, and then you populate those kingdoms on days four, five, and six. So day one, the kingdom of light. Day four, what specific lights? The sun, the moon, stars, or whatever. Day two, you set up the sky and water, then you populate that with birds and water creatures on day five. Day three, you set up dry land as the kingdom. What's going to populate that? Land creatures, plants, and people on day six. Somebody said that the order of creation then is theological, not chronological. It's trying to talk about God as a king, setting up his kingdom and populating the kingdom. So maybe you can think of it that way. Or I've heard it referred to this way. You have 3 days of forming. You form light and dark, day one. You form the sea and sky, day two. You form the land and plants, day three. And then you have 3 days of filling those forms. So day four, sun, moon, stars fills up the light and dark. Day five, fish and birds fills up the form of the sea and sky. And then day six, land, animals, and humans filled up the land and plants. So again, one, two, three, four, five, six. Four going with one, five with two, six with three. Now, is there any support for this? Well, for one thing, you don't need science again, so that's nice. You don't end up fighting over evolution and all that. It actually answers the problem of day four, if you think about it. Day four says the sun's created, but you've got the earlier days where you got morning and evening. How do you have morning and evening if you don't have the sun? You don't have the sun shining on the earth, creating the light and the darkness. So this seems to solve that problem. And it's not the only place in the Bible where numbers are a big deal, this forming of 1, 2, 3 with 4, 5, 6. Now, for example, Genesis 1, 1 is made of 7 Hebrew words. Well, 7 is the number for God. That's not an accident. Genesis 1, 2 is made of 14 words. The word God appears 35 times in Genesis 1, 1 through 2, 4. So those are numbers that involve 7, multiples of 7. There's all sorts of structural frameworks throughout the Bible. Are there problems with this framework theory? Well, a lot of people are very uncomfortable because it says, look, you're getting rid of narrative, you're getting rid of chronicle, you're getting rid of historical story, and instead you're getting poetry. And then people get worried that you're going to be so loose that you turn the rest of the Bible into just nice thoughts rather than real people. And it seems to dilute the reality of the story. So, something to think about. I want us to think about, though, a more basic question as we look at these various views of Genesis. It really comes back to the big question, doesn't it? We have a choice. We can say, in the beginning, God. That's how Genesis starts. There's really only one other view, isn't there? And that is, in the beginning, the particles. So there's the materialist, there's the hardcore physicalist, the person that doesn't believe in a God. So let's start there. Let's have mercy and grace for everybody who disagrees with us, but we're all in the same camp because we believe in the beginning, God. So what can we do based on a lot of this? We need to teach our children and adults, and I'm talking teach them these various views, at least to open them up to say, you know, there's a possibility of another view. We don't want them settled in on a view and then going off to school or reading something in the newspaper or looking at something online and it shatters their view because it doesn't seem to line up with what they're saying. There are other Christian views for Genesis. Number two, we need to encourage people in the church to know what's going on in science. That's important. We need to be science literates. We should be reading in the area of intelligent design. We need, one more time, showing grace to people who disagree with us. They're not our enemies. They're on our side. They love God too. They just may have a different view of Genesis. We need some resources. And please contact me, Gary@apologeticsforlife.org. I'll be glad to send you some good resources in the area of science. You can go online and see this video if you want, apologeticsforlife.org. If you want to hear from these different views, there's something called the Genesis Debate. There's another book called Three Views on Creation and Evolution. There are DVDs from Alestra Media. You can go to answersingenesis.org if you want to hear more about the young earth view. You can go to reasons.org if you want to go to the old earth view. Take a look at BioLogos, B-I-O-L-O-G-O-S, BioLogos.org if you want to hear the theistic evolution view. Well, it's a tough issue. A lot of people get very uptight and don't want to give any ground, and so we need to relax about this and realize there are a lot of different views out there about Genesis.